This is episode 41 of Social Entrepreneur with Joy McBrain of Faranita.
I was really wanting to figure out how do we create a systems-changing solution that's going to attack sexual violence at its source.
Welcome to the Social Entrepreneur Podcast. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former business executive with Fortune 500 companies. Today, I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week, we bring you exciting stories from the world of social entrepreneurs, benefit corporations, and impact investing. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome to episode 41 of Social Entrepreneur with Joy McBrain of Faranita. Joy has a tough story to tell, and I was really moved by it. When she was in high school, she suffered from sexual violence. But what I love about Joy's story is she was able to take that experience and process it, and because of who she is and what she was able to do, she was able to turn that experience into social good. She helps and empowers women escape from violence, sexual violence, domestic violence, violence of all forms through fair trade and economic development. So I'd like you to hear Joy tell her story. It's an amazing story of what she's been able to do to transform this tragedy into a triumph. But be sure to listen all the way to the end of this conversation, because at the end, there's a contest that we are starting this week, and Joy has provided us with a pair of earrings, and the earrings themselves have an amazing story. You'll be able to read about this on the website, but stick around, listen to this interview, write down a few quotes as you go along, and at the end, I'm going to tell you how we're going to give away this pair of earrings from Faranita. So here she is, Joy McBrain of Faranita.
My name is Joy McBrain. I'm the CEO and founder of Faranita.
What is Faranita?
Faranita is a social enterprise that empowers women around the world through dignified jobs and fair trade relationships. So what that means is that we're selling products made by women who are talented yet typically marginalized. We currently work with about 8,000 women in 16 developing countries. We sell products like jewelry, clothing, accessories, that sort of stuff.
Wow. I look forward to getting into that. So, but how did you get here? What was your path that led you to establishing Faranita?
I get this question a lot because people don't really understand, like, you know, so you're this 26-year-old white girl from Minnesota. Why are you hanging out with all these women from around the world, and why are you passionate about this? But ultimately, I've been passionate about creating opportunities for women and girls for quite a while. I grew up in Woodbury, Minnesota, which is a pretty privileged area. Grew up in a really happy home and did well in school, and, you know, was kind of categorized as a leader. But during my senior year of high school, I experienced rape for the first time. Mm-hmm. And this is when I was, it just like opened my eyes to oppression in an entirely new way that I hadn't otherwise seen, you know, having grown up in this kind of sheltered, but wonderful home, right? And so the way I dealt with that was I did a lot of research. I spent about 2 years doing research, and I didn't tell anyone about my experience with sexual violence, which now whenever I talk to women about, sexual violence and whatnot, you know, the one thing I say that you need to do is talk to somebody. And if, you know, somebody needs someone, to be open about that with, I'm happy to be that person. But, yeah, so I spent about 2 years doing research on sexual violence and how it changes your brain and how, women around the world are affected by it. And I learned a lot of different things, but one statistic that stuck out was that Peru has the highest reported rate of domestic violence in the world. So 70% of women in Peru report experiencing domestic violence, which is an insane number, right? Totally unacceptable. But that 70% reported, which means actual rates are even higher. And so I became kind of obsessed with like, okay, how am I going to take action on this issue? You know, it's an issue that I feel closely about because I've had this experience that, you know, really took a lot of the power, that I felt like I had as a young person. It really just kind of stripped me of those powers. And, how do I regain that power? And how do I, help other women, regain their voice, who have experienced similar things? And so, as a freshman in college, I went to the University of Minnesota, studied nonprofit management and entrepreneurship. And at the U, you take a lot of classes in for-profit management, which is great. And I'm glad I did it now. But at the time, I was like frustrated with why I had to, you know, learn how to do marketing for Target when I was interested in, you know, how do I create a nonprofit and how do I create social change? And so I spent my freshman year of college planning to build a battered women's shelter in Peru. So I spent about a year figuring out, okay, how do I move to this country I've never been to, speak a language that I thought I could speak, but couldn't really speak that well, I found out. And how do I start a nonprofit?
Yeah.
So it started there. So the summer after my freshman year of college, I moved down there. I worked with a group of local women and we built a battered women's shelter. And it was the first battered women's shelter in Chimbote, Peru. It's a town about 8 hours north of Lima, right on the coast there. And the closest women's shelter is 8 hours back in Lima. And so when we were working with the women and trying to figure out what the needs were, the need for a battered women's shelter came up really quickly. So that's how I started working with different women who've experienced sexual violence, domestic abuse, who've been sexually exploited. And from working with them, I was kind of like, I was just so interested in learning, okay, now I felt like I had a better understanding of what that violence looks like in Peru. Okay, but now you hear about gang rapes in Delhi. Okay, then I wanted to go to India to learn what does sexual violence look like in that context. And I was really wanting to figure out how do we create a systems-changing solution that's going to attack sexual violence at its source, right? And so I was going around and meeting with all these other social entrepreneurs, kind of similar to what you do, right? Looking for the solution. And I kind of decided I wanted to start something that was more focused on social work. But when I was talking to all these women, they're like, well, that's a nice idea, but what I need right now is a job. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I ended up with Farinita.
Wow.
Figured out we gotta give them jobs.
Right. So you when you first went to Peru, were you using sort of a systems design standpoint where you were, you know, you were doing the empathy work, you were down there with them, trying to really understand their daily lives? Or did you sort of come in and say, I'm going to go to Peru and build a battered women's shelter? And so you're, in a way, that's sort of an outside in approach. So which approach were you taking initially?
Yeah, that's another great question. So I've now been to Peru 3 times, and I think the first time I went there, it was more of this outside-in approach. I wasn't the one that came up with the idea to build the women's shelter. That was absolutely the group of local women that they're like, you know, this is what we need. I said, you know, I want to spend the summer with you. I'm happy to do whatever work you need. I want to focus on sexual or domestic violence. What can we do? What can I do to help? And they said, you know, women's shelter, that's what it is. And so I started fundraising and figuring out what a management system would look like from here.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to Peru, it was this issue of, okay, I've learned how battered women's shelters operate in the U.S. I've met with, you know, different executive directors and whatnot, different program directors. I go down to Peru. Well, you know, it looks totally different.
Right.
And me being an 18-year-old, and not having that cultural competency, it was pretty confusing. But it was also kind of a slap in the face, like, okay, Joy, you don't know it all.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you going to learn and improve for the future? So the second summer that I went back after my second year of college, I went down there with a very open mind, like no agenda. I'm just going to listen, meet with women, try to align my lifestyle as closely to a Peruvian woman as possible. So I had a host mom there Her name is Senora Ana. She's actually the woman I named Feranita after, because in Spanish you have the Ita as a term of endearment, so our whole community calls her Senora Anita. And so I would do everything with her. I went to morning prayer every day. I would help her. And she's a community social worker, so I was meeting with all these different women and just learning just insane amounts. And then I had goddaughters in the area, so I'd go hang out with the little ones for dinner. I'd help make dinner. And in the evenings, my host sister wants to go salsa dancing. So, you know, you go salsa dancing till 4 a.m. and regret it the next day when you try to get up for morning prayer. But it was much more open-minded that time. And that's really when I started to, you know, understand. It was the empathy piece. It absolutely was.
Right.
Yeah.
So you went to Peru the second time. When did you say, what I need to do is to start Feranita? At what point in your journey?
It was after that.
Okay.
there's been a few iterations of Feranita.
Okay.
To get to where we are now. At the time though, the second time I was in Peru, they have this stuff called Estera, which is kind of like strong hay, and many of these women that I was meeting would have like upwards of 15 children because they've been raped so many times. And you think about it, and you know, if you always have a baby, you can't leave home to go get a job because you always have a newborn that you have to look after. And so these women would braid this hay stuff, this estera, into just like long strands. And then it's used to make rugs and the backs of chairs and sometimes walls and things. Mm. And I spent so much time thinking about, okay, this is a product that these women know how to make. They can braid it in their own homes, but the issue was that there wasn't enough value on it. So they could braid for a week, and I don't remember the exact amount they were paid, but it was something like, you know, 50 cents, a dollar. Right. And that's after nonstop braiding for a week, right? And they had to pay half of that to go buy the raw material in the first place. So I was really trying to figure out, okay, what can we create from this that would raise the demand on what they're creating so that we could get better jobs for these women with 15 children? And I thought about that for probably 2 years. And ultimately, it's just not a product that I think I can sell somewhere else. And I think part of it too is I just wasn't excited about it.
Right.
You know, like I couldn't.
Right. How do you get
nothing was
excited
clicking.
About rope?
Right. Yeah. Like at the time I didn't even own a rug, you know, in my own home.
Right.
So
yeah,
I don't know.
Okay.
I was trying to figure out how to make shoes or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but that's when the idea of economic opportunity clicked. And then after traveling, over the next 6 years, I traveled to about 18 different countries, on and off between things. And that's when I was talking to women about, you know, the idea of a social work focused organization on sexual violence. And they were like, you know, it's a nice idea, but what I need right now is a job. If I had a source of income, I could potentially leave an abusive partner. I'm seen as having more worth in my own home. So abuse levels go down. You know, I can take care of my own kids. That's my number one job anyways. But after I heard that across all of these borders, it was like, okay, Joy, let's scrap your idea that, you know, it was more like me imposing an idea.
Right.
As opposed to, okay, let's create something together. So it was all these women always like, oh, you know, will you take this, you know, bracelet that I made and bring it back to the U.S. and sell it for me? And quite honestly, everywhere I went, I looked at it and I was like, no, like, ugh, that's, I mean, the talent was there, but the design was not, wow. You know, and I don't ever want to have to sell something based off pity,
right.
You know, that's
right.
Not creating an empathetic relationship between artisan and consumer.
Right.
That's not it. And so after saying no for all these years, but still building those relationships, about 6 years later, I came back. To these groups. And I said, do you know what? Like, let's sell it. But I'm going to work with you on design. So I actually minored in design at the U as well. I started my first jewelry company when I was 16. And so jewelry was something that I was always excited about, passionate about, had a lot of experience designing. And it was just a natural fit. especially because so many of these artisans, you know, whenever you travel, what are they trying to sell you? It's always like simple or elaborate jewelry, right? Yeah. And so how can we just little tweaks? So it's still using your same, traditional art forms, if that's what you're passionate about, or using the skill sets that you've already developed, but how can we just tweak it a little bit? So instead of selling, you know, a couple of them here in the US, you know, and you have to be like, oh, you know, help the women, like they want to buy water for their children, which is true and right. horrible and the right. reality, right?
Right.
But I don't want to sell it based on that. I want you to buy it because you think it's awesome, because you'll actually wear it. And then you find out, you know, about the implications it has with women around the world in the process.
Okay. So your social impact is really based on the goods that you're selling.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that these women are creating these products of their own hands. And then, you know, I do want to get back to what is the benefit to them, right? What mm-hmm. what are the impacts of being able to create revenue and a living for themselves? But just simply by being able to create that revenue, that is the product of itself creates the benefit.
Absolutely. Right?
Okay. So
Absolutely.
That's part of your, and so when you think about your theory of change,
mm-hmm.
okay, can you kind of walk me through just high level? You don't have to go into the details, right? So just sort of, you know, this happens and this is the benefit and here are the steps in between.
So we're creating products that millennials in the US want at a price point that they're willing to pay for it. Therefore, we've created jobs for thousands of women around the world and hope to keep counting, mm-hmm. right? Hoping to grow that number. And because they have this job, they're potentially able to leave that abusive partner, are seen as having more worth in their own home. You know, they're empowered, my little air quotes. And what that means is they can send their kids to school. They can provide food for their family to eat. You know, they give that money back to the community. The statistic from the UN is that for every dollar that a woman earns, between 80 and 90% goes back to her family and community, as opposed to 30 to 40 cents spent by men.
Mm.
And when women are earning money, the sales of milk and bread go up, as opposed to alcohol and gambling, right? Yeah. And by no means is the saying, you know, all men should be earning money. It's just saying we need to be empowering women into these positions of leadership and empower them through economic opportunity so that they can provide for their families and communities. And right. what does that look like?
Right. I think that's part of what Muhammad Yunus really discovered, was by creating economic opportunities for the women, you lift the community.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So tell me now about your business today. So how does it work? Who's your perfect target customer?
My perfect target customer. My target market is women ages about 25 to 35, 25 to 40. They're socially aware, educated, usually like jewelry and shopping, and feel this like innate desire to contribute to something greater, right?
Right.
Also, I'm targeting a customer that doesn't have a ton of disposable income. Right now, the way fair trade is traditionally done, so we sell fair trade jewelry. I guess I didn't say that. Fair trade is based off of 10 different principles. Producers are being paid fair wages, of course. They're working in good working conditions. It's environmentally sustainable. Men and women have equal opportunity. No child labor. The list goes on. But ultimately, most fair trade products are being sold at really, really, really high prices because, and you see this with a lot of like social good products, right? Because it has this impact, you can charge more because people are willing to pay more. And I agree with that. Like, I understand that that works. However, there is this other population of people who want to contribute, who want to be a part of that social change, but they don't have the income to pay, you know, $300 for a necklace that's empowering women. So when I was working with artisans, I was seeing, you know, a fair wage is based off the cost of living in that country. And so it doesn't mean we're paying them, you know, $15 an hour. because that would be the US, right? Whereas in India, you can pay someone fair wages, and I can still sell you a necklace at $12, which is kind of unheard of in this fair trade model. Quite honestly, I don't know if that's just because I'm still new and maybe a little bit naive and haven't thought through all of the overhead costs yet, but I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Good.
So
how do you attract? So you're selling through the web only, is that right?
No.
Oh, okay. So tell me about your distribution channel then.
Yeah. So I sell online. I sell in pop-up shops, okay. And then I sell to wholesalers or to other existing retailers rather.
Okay.
About 40% right now of my revenue is done online, about 50% in pop-up shops, and about 10% through wholesale channels.
Okay. That added up to be 100%. Okay, good.
So.
That was good. So as you, let's just focus on the web part for just one second. How do you attract, acquire new buyers?
I think this is one of the most difficult parts of running a business. I mean, when you talk to anyone, I would assume that they'd say the same thing, right? But especially because I'm targeting millennials. And if you read anything about marketing to millennials online, everything is like, you know, they won't fall for traditional marketing strategies. You know, if you, all the traditional stuff, they just blind eye, you know, they're trying to sell me stuff and therefore they don't buy it, right? And so you have to be super authentic, super transparent, and really engage them in the process, which is great because that's what I wanted to do from the beginning. You know, that's just who I am as a person. It's made it more fun too, you know, so we have Facebook and Instagram pages that are used pretty regularly to engage with our audience. And we'll post designs and, you know, which designs do you like better? How can we tweak these to make them something that you would love? That sort of thing. And so when your customer is involved in creating that product, we regularly see, you know, the people who gave their input now, oh yeah, I want to get one for me and my sister and aunt or, you know, whatever. So that's part of it. Honestly, I don't have it all figured out yet.
No, it's okay.
That's the next thing I'm hiring for is a digital marketing manager. So
okay, you heard it here. She's looking for a digital marketing manager. If you're looking for a job, here it is. So Joy, do you know where your website traffic comes from? What percentage comes from search, or do you have paid ads, or from Facebook, or do you know?
Yeah, a lot of most of my traffic comes from Instagram or Facebook. I do paid ads on Facebook, not on Instagram, but I get more engagement on Instagram. It's just confusing. and we get a lot of search. And then whenever there's some sort of, I mean, the Twin Cities community has been so ridiculously amazing and just supported this concept from the beginning. And whenever they're, you know, we're featured in a fashion blog or we were just in the Minnesota Business Magazine, people are like, we'll share it. And that's when we really see increase of traffic.
Right.
How so many people found us during the holiday season, I really don't have a clue because I did not do that much marketing. Yeah. So, great problem.
Oh, I got to figure out. So are you a little overwhelmed with the orders right now? Are you a little behind on that? What's going on with that?
A good overwhelmed.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Just means we're expanding. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm hoping to do at least double the amount of sales next year, which is why we're hiring because.
Good.
I'm mad about my capacity at this point.
Good. Yes, I know that feeling.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So as you think about keys to your success and then new and aspiring social entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So people who are coming along behind you.
Mm-hmm.
What's one or two pieces of advice, either something that somebody told you that you go, wow, that was a golden nugget. I'm going to hang on to that one. Or something that you've just learned the hard way. You've got the scars on your knuckles to prove it. Mm. And, you know, so now you have something to teach. So there's the student is ready. The teacher has appeared. So what is it that you would love to pass on to another social entrepreneur?
Yeah. I think the golden nugget that I learned from a mentor a few years ago. I was struggling because I kept getting criticized for not being professional enough. This was just like this angry cloud that was always above me, right? All the time. Like, and it seemed like I was not going to be able to succeed because I couldn't embody this idea of what a professional is and what that looks like, right? But this mentor, she said, she made a list of everything she wants to be known for. And then she made a parallel list of every way that those qualities could be said negatively, right? And so she wants to, so her example is that she wants to be memorable, but sometimes people would call her too dominant. And she just had to recognize with herself that, you know, you're going to have haters. And if someone is calling you too dominant, you internally can know, hey, I'm doing my job. I want it to be memorable. You know, I did it. And so I made a list. And, you know, the top one was, I want to be authentic. And that's who I want to be. And the negative side of that is sometimes perceived as not professional. Right?
Excellent.
And so now when people say I'm not professional, whatever. But for every one time I get told I'm not professional, I probably am complimented 10, you know, 20, 30 times about really being authentic in my relationships with people, which is phenomenal. That's what I'd prefer. But in terms of advice to aspiring social entrepreneurs, the thing I always say is like, just do it. Like, I was 18 when I really started my first social venture. And I think there, well, I know that there's this idea that young people aren't capable of actually doing it, right? They don't know enough. They don't have enough experience. They should wait and get a couple, you know, high paying jobs before eventually when they're 40, 50 plus, that's when you start your social enterprise, you know? And while there's nothing wrong with that path, we're undermining the ideas and the brilliance that young people do have and the energy that they have to make this social change happen. Yeah. Right. And so, I struggled a lot as a young person in this field. You know, when you're 18 and say you want to build a battered women's shelter, people laugh at you a lot. I really struggled with getting the amount of donations that I needed, which was only $2,000 to create a whole shelter. I found that people are better at supporting, generally, are better at supporting after I've achieved as opposed to on the journey to making something happen. Now that's not the case. I think 25 is the magic number that people start thinking you credible. But, my advice to young aspiring social entrepreneurs is to do it, push through that, like, wall of negativity. And there are people that are willing to invest in you and willing to support you and mentor you and whatnot. And because you're young, it helps with so many other things, you know, like, I wouldn't be, where I am today if I hadn't started it, you know, version 1.0 way back when, right? And I kind of created the competency and the confidence at that point that now, I feel more able to do it. Plus, people like to help young people. I've learned that.
Yeah, that's great.
So.
Good advice. I appreciate that. If people wanted to find Farinita on the web or on social media, where would they look?
www.fairanita.com, FAIRANITA.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, Pinterest and Twitter too, not quite as much, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then a call to action. And so I want to give you a second to think about this. A call to action, for people who have been listening to the Social Entrepreneur. And before you give that call to action, I want to acknowledge you, Joy, for something that you barely mentioned, but I heard you. And you said, I first experienced rape as a young person.
Right.
And you converted that into this amazing gift for the world. And I just want to acknowledge you as a human being and to say, I'm so impressed.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It really means a lot.
Thanks. All right. So a call to action. As you think about people who have been listening to Social Entrepreneur for the last half hour or so, what's one thing that you'd love for them to go do?
I mean, ultimately, I sell product, right? Yeah. So if you want to change the lives of women around the world, no, but actually, yes.
Yes. Well, let's acknowledge that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yes, that's your authentic voice showing up saying, hey, you know, I'm being a little silly here, but gosh, I run a business. It'd be really nice if you bought something. Okay.
Yeah.
I acknowledge that. Okay.
Yeah.
What else? Anything else?
Yeah. So I really, really, really love feedback. Right now I'm a official team of one, but an unofficial team of many. And so if you go to the website, look at product. If there's things you love, awesome. If you buy it, I'll send you a feedback form. But if you don't, I'd love to know why not, what doesn't fit with you, what price points you might be looking for. And then also if you could just share it with people that you think might be interested, that would be huge, huge, huge. That's how we'll grow.
All right. Well, Joy, thank you so much for being with us on Social Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Tony. It's been great.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we provide Social Entrepreneur every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review Social Entrepreneur on iTunes. Now, if you want the show notes, you can go to tonyloyd.com/041. That's TONYLOYD/041. Now, I told you that there's a giveaway of this amazing pair of earrings. You can read all about it. If you go to those show notes, there's a link to the giveaway contest. So be sure to check that out. Also, we still have our ebook available, The 5 Key Traits of Successful Social Entrepreneurs. You can get that through the show notes, or you could just simply text the word SOCENT to the number 44222. That's SOCENT to the number 44222. So thanks again for joining us. And until next time, please remember, use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.